Children's Arts Network is community funded, supported by listeners like you, and by a grant from the Joyce N. Furman Memorial Trust, celebrating a lifetime of giving, education, and the arts.
This is iCat.
KQAC HD2 Portland 89.9.
KQOC HD2 Glenydon Beach 88.1.
KSLC HD2 McMinnville 90.3.
And KQHR HD2 The Dells and Hood River 88.1.
You're listening to iCan, and right now is the complete works of Winnie the Pooh.
The complete works of Winnie the Pooh. The immortal stories from the books Winnie the Pooh and The House at Pooh Corner, and poems from When We Were Very Young and Now We Are Six by Alan Alexander Milne. Presented for radio, unabridged, in 18 parts. Produced by Christopher Toyne and performed by Peter Dennis. Part 13, in which Rabbit has a busy day and we learn what Christopher Robin does in the mornings.
In which Rabbit has a busy day, and we learn what Christopher Robin does in the mornings. It was going to be one of Rabbit's busy days. As soon as he woke up, he felt important, as if everything depended upon him. It was just the day for organizing something, or for writing a notice signed Rabbit, or for seeing what everybody else thought about it. It was a perfect morning for hurrying round to Pooh and saying, "Very well, then, I'll tell Piglet." And then going to Piglet and saying, "Pooh thinks, but perhaps I'd better see Owl first." It was a captainish sort of day when everybody said, "Yes, Rabbit," and "No, Rabbit," and waited until he had told them. He came out of his house and sniffed the warm spring morning as he wondered what he would do. Kanga's house was nearest, and at Kanga's house was Roo, who said, "Yes, Rabbit," and "No, Rabbit," almost better than anybody else in the forest. But there was another animal there nowadays, the strange and bouncy Tigger, and he was the sort of Tigger who was always in front when you were showing him the way anywhere, and was generally out of sight when at last you came to the place and said proudly, "Here we are." "No, not Kanga's," said Rabbit thoughtfully to himself as he curled his whiskers in the sun. And to make quite sure that he wasn't going there, he turned to the left and trotted off in the other direction, which was the way to Christopher Robin's house. "After all," said Rabbit to himself, "Christopher Robin depends on me. He's fond of Pooh and Piglet and Eeyore, and so am I. But they haven't any brain, not to notice. And he respects Owl, because you can't help respecting anybody who can spell Tuesday, even if he doesn't spell it right. But spelling isn't everything. There are days when spelling Tuesday simply doesn't count. And Kanga is too busy looking after Roo, and Roo is too young, and Tigger is too bouncy to be any help. So there's really nobody but me when you come to look at it. I'll go and see if there's anything he wants doing, and then I'll do it for him. It's just the day for doing things." He trotted along happily, and by he crossed the stream and came to the place where his friends and relations lived. There seemed to be even more of them about than usual this morning, and having nodded to a hedgehog or two, with whom he was too busy to shake hands, and having said, good morning, importantly to some of the others, and, "Ah, there you are," kindly to the smaller ones, he waved a paw at them over his shoulder and was gone, leaving such an air of excitement and I don't know what behind him, that several members of the Beetle family, including Henry Rush, made their way at once to the 100-acre wood and began climbing trees, in the hope of getting to the top before it happened, whatever it was, so that they might see it properly. Rabbit hurried on by the edge of the 100-acre wood, feeling more important every minute. And soon he came to the tree where Christopher Robin lived. He knocked at the door, and he called out once or twice. Then he walked back a little way, put his paw up to keep the sun out, and called to the top of the tree. And then he turned all round and shouted, "Hello!" And, "I say, it's Rabbit!" But nothing happened. Then he stopped and listened, and everything stopped and listened with him. And the forest was very lone and still and peaceful in the sunshine. Until suddenly, 100 miles above him, a lark began to sing. "Bother!" said Rabbit. "He's gone out." He went back to the green front door just to make sure. And he was turning away, feeling that his morning had got all spoilt, when he saw a piece of paper on the ground. And there was a pin in it, as if it had fallen off the door. "Ha!" said Rabbit, feeling quite happy again. "Another notice." This is what it said. "Gone out. Backs on. Busy. Backs on. CR. "Ha!" said Rabbit again. "I must tell the others." And he hurried off importantly. The nearest house was Owl's. And to Owl's house in the 100-acre wood he made his way. He came to Owl's door, and he knocked, and he rang, and he rang, and he knocked. And at last Owl's head came out and said,
"Go away, I'm thinking. Oh, it's you."
Which was how he always began. "Owl," said Rabbit shortly, "you and I have brains. The others have fluff. If there is any thinking to be done in this forest, and when I say thinking, I mean thinking, you and I must do it."
"Yes," said Owl, "I was."
"Read that." Owl took Christopher Robin's notice from Rabbit and looked at it nervously. He could spell his own name, Wall, and he could spell Tuesday, so that you knew it wasn't Wednesday. And he could read quite comfortably when you weren't looking over his shoulder and saying, "Well?" all the time. And he could, "Well?" said Rabbit.
"Yes,"
said Owl, looking wise and thoughtful.
"I see what you mean. Undoubtedly."
"Well?"
"Exactly,"
said Owl.
"Precisely."
And he added, after a little thought,
If you had not come to me, I should have come to you."
"Why?" said Rabbit.
"For that very reason,"
said Owl, hoping that something helpful would happen soon. "Yesterday morning," said Rabbit solemnly, "I went to see Christopher Robin. He was out. Pinned on his door was a notice."
"The same notice?"
"A different one, but the meaning was the same. It's very odd."
"Amazing,"
said Owl, looking at the notice again, and getting just for a moment a curious sort of feeling that something had happened to Christopher Robin's back.
"What did you do?"
"Nothing."
"The best thing,"
said Owl wisely. "Well," said Rabbit again, as Owl knew he was going to.
"Exactly,"
said Owl. For a little while he couldn't think of anything more, and then all of a sudden he had an idea.
"Tell me, Rabbit," he said, "the exact words of the first notice. This is very important. Everything depends on this. The exact words of the first notice."
"It was just the same as that one, really." Owl looked at him and wondered whether to push him off the tree. But feeling that he could always do it afterwards, he tried once more to find out what they were talking about.
"The exact words, please,"
he said, as if Rabbit hadn't spoken. "It just said, gone out, backs on. Same as this, only this says,
Bissy backs on too.
Al gave a great sigh of relief.
Ah, said Al, now we know where we are.
Yes, but where's Christopher Robin? Said Rabbit. That's the point. Al looked at the notice again. To one of his education, the reading of it was easy. Gone out, backs on, Bissy backs on. Just the sort of thing you'd expect to see on a notice.
It is quite clear what has happened, my dear Rabbit, he said. Christopher Robin has gone out somewhere with backs on. He and backs on are busy together. Have you seen a backs on anywhere about in the forest lately?
I don't know, said Rabbit. That's what I came to ask you. What are they like?
Well, said Al, the spotted or herbaceous backson is just a... at least...
he said.
It's really more of a... of course, he said, it depends on the... well, said Al, the fact is, he said, I don't know what they're like,
said Al frankly. Thank you, said Rabbit, and he hurried off to see Pooh. Before he had gone very far, he heard a noise. So he stopped and listened. This was the noise. Noise by Pooh. Oh, the butterflies are flying, now the winter days are dying, and the primroses are trying to be seen, and the turtle doves are cooing, and the woods are up and doing, for the violets are blooming in the green. Oh, the honeybees are gumming on their little wings and humming that the summer which is coming will be fun. And the cows are almost cooing, and the turtle doves are mooing, which is why a poo is pooing in the sun. For the spring is really springing, you can see a skylark singing, and the bluebells which are ringing can be heard. And the cuckoo isn't cooing, but he's cucking and he's hooing, for a poo is simply pooing like a bird.
Hello, Pooh, said Rabbit.
Hello, Rabbit, said Pooh dreamily.
Did you make that song up?
Well, I sort of made it up,
said Pooh.
It isn't brain,
he went on humbly,
because you know why, Rabbit, but it comes to me sometimes.
Ah, said Rabbit, who never let things come to him but always went and fetched them. Well, the point is, have you seen a spotted or herbaceous backson in the forest at all?
No, said Pooh. Not a... No, said Pooh. I saw Tigger just now.
That's no good.
No, said Pooh. I thought it wasn't.
Have you seen Piglet?
Yes, said Pooh. I suppose that isn't any good either,
he asked meekly.
Well, it depends if he saw anything.
He saw me,
said Pooh. Rabbit sat down on the ground next to Pooh, and feeling much less important like that, stood up again.
What it comes to is this, he said. What does Christopher Robin do in the morning nowadays?
What sort of thing?
Well, can you tell me anything you've seen him do in the morning, these last few days?
Yes, said Pooh. We had breakfast together yesterday, by the pine trees. I'd made up a little basket, just a little fair-sized basket, an ordinary, biggish sort of basket full of...
Yes, yes, said Rabbit, but I mean later than that. Have you seen him between 11 and 12?
Well, said Pooh, at 11 o'clock... At 11 o'clock... Well, at 11 o'clock, you see, I generally get home about then, because I have one or two things to do.
Quarter past 11, then.
Well,
said Pooh.
Half past!
Yes, said Pooh. At half past, or perhaps later, I might see him.
And now that he did think of it, he began to remember that he hadn't seen Christopher Robin about so much lately. Not in the mornings. Afternoons, yes. Evenings, yes. Before breakfast, yes. Just after breakfast, yes. And then perhaps, see you again, Pooh. And off he'd go.
That's just it, said Rabbit. Where?
Perhaps he's looking for something.
What?
Asked Rabbit.
That's just what I was going to say,
said Pooh. And then he added,
perhaps he's looking for
a spotted or herbaceous backson.
Yes, said Pooh. One of those. In case it isn't.
Rabbit looked at him severely.
I don't think you're helping, he said.
No,
said Pooh.
I do try,
he added humbly. Rabbit thanked him for trying and said that he would now go and see Eeyore, and Pooh could walk with him if he liked. But Pooh, who felt another verse of his song coming on him, said he would wait for Piglet. Goodbye, Rabbit. So Rabbit went off. But as it happened, it was Rabbit who saw Piglet first. Piglet had got up early that morning to pick himself a bunch of violets. And when he had picked them and put them in a pot in the middle of his house, it suddenly came over him that nobody had ever picked Eeyore a bunch of violets. And the more he thought of this, the more he thought how sad it was to be an animal who had never had a bunch of violets picked for him. So he hurried out again, saying to himself, Eeyore, violets, and then violets, Eeyore, in case he forgot, because it was that sort of day. And he picked a large bunch and trotted along, smelling them and feeling very happy, until he came to the place where Eeyore was.
Oh, Eeyore,
began Piglet a little nervously, because Eeyore was busy. Eeyore put out a paw and waved him away.
Tomorrow, said Eeyore, or the next day.
Piglet came a little closer to see what it was. Eeyore had three sticks on the ground and was looking at them. Two of the sticks were touching at one end, but not at the other, and the third stick was laid across them. Piglet thought that perhaps it was a trap of some kind.
Oh, Eeyore,
he began again.
I just...
Is that little Piglet?
Said Eeyore, still looking hard at his sticks.
Yes, Eeyore, and I...
Do you know what this is?
No,
said Piglet.
It's an A.
Oh,
said Piglet.
Not O, A,
said Eeyore severely.
Can't you hear? Or do you think you have more education than Christopher Robin?
Yes,
said Piglet.
No,
said Piglet very quickly. And he came closer still.
Christopher Robin said it was an A, and an A it is, until somebody treads on it,
Eeyore added sternly. Piglet jumped backwards hurriedly and smelt at his violets.
Do you know what A means, little Piglet?
No, Eeyore, I don't.
It means learning. It means education. It means all the things that you and Pooh haven't got. That's what A means.
Oh,
said Piglet again.
I mean, does it?
He explained quickly.
I'm telling you, people come and go in this forest and they say, it's only Eeyore, so it doesn't count. They walk to and fro saying, ha, ha. But do they know anything about A? They don't. It's just three sticks to them. But to the educated, mark this, little Piglet, to the educated, not meaning Poohs and Piglets, it's a great and glorious A. Not, he added, just something that anybody can come and breathe on.
Piglet stepped back nervously and looked round for help.
"Here's Rabbit," he said gladly. "Hello, Rabbit."
Rabbit came up importantly, nodded to Piglet, and said, "Ah, Eeyore," in the voice of one who would be saying goodbye in about 2 minutes. "There's just one thing I wanted to ask you, Eeyore. What happens to Christopher Robin in the mornings nowadays?"
"What's this I'm looking at?" said Eeyore, still looking at it.
"Three sticks," said Rabbit promptly.
"You see," said Eeyore to Piglet. He turned to Rabbit. "I will now answer your question," he said solemnly.
"Thank you," said Rabbit.
"What does Christopher Robin do in the mornings?" "He learns. He becomes educated. He instigorates. I think that is the word he mentioned, but I may be referring to something else. He instigorates knowledge. In my small way, I also, if I have the word right, am doing what he does. That, for instance,
is an A," said Rabbit, "but not a very good one. Well, I must get back and tell the others."
Eeyore looked at his sticks, and then he looked at Piglet.
"What did Rabbit say it was?"
he asked.
"An A,"
said Piglet.
"Did you tell him?"
"No, Eeyore, I didn't. I expect he just knew."
"He knew? You mean this A thing is a thing Rabbit knew?"
"Yes, Eeyore. He's clever, Rabbit is."
"Clever?" said Eeyore scornfully, putting a foot heavily on his three sticks. "Education?"
said Eeyore bitterly, jumping on his six sticks.
"What is learning?"
asked Eeyore as he kicked his 12 sticks into the air.
"A thing Rabbit knows? Huh!"
I think,"
began Piglet nervously.
"Don't,"
said Eeyore.
I think violets are rather nice,"
said Piglet, and he laid his bunch in front of Eeyore and scampered off. Next morning, the notice on Christopher Robin's door said, "Gone out, back soon, CR. Which is why all the animals in the forest, except, of course, the spotted and herbaceous Baxon, now know what Christopher Robin does in the mornings. Twinkle Toes. When the sun shines through the leaves of the apple tree, when the sun makes shadows of the leaves of the apple tree, then I pass on the grass from one leaf to another, from one leaf to its brother. Tiptoe, tiptoe, here I go. Jonathan Joe. Jonathan Joe has a mouth like an O, and a wheelbarrow full of surprises. If you ask for a bat or for something like that, he has got it, whatever the size is. If you're wanting a ball, it's no trouble at all. Why, the more that you ask for, the merrier. Like a hoop and a top and a watch that won't stop and some sweets and an Aberdeen terrier. Jonathan Joe has a mouth like an O, but this is what makes him so funny. If you give him a smile, only once in a while, then he never expects any money. If I were king, I often wish I were a king, and then I could do anything. If only I were king of Spain, I'd take my hat off in the rain. If only I were king of France, I wouldn't brush my hair for aunts. I think if I were king of Greece, I'd push things off the mantelpiece. If I were king of Norway, I'd ask an elephant to stay. If I were king of Babylon, I'd leave my button gloves undone. If I were king of Timbuktu, I'd think of lovely things to do.
If I were king of anything, I'd tell the soldiers, I'm the king.
By and by, Piglet woke up. As soon as he woke, he said to himself,
oh.
Then he said bravely,
yes.
And then still more bravely,
quite so.
But he didn't feel very brave, for the word which was really jiggeting about in his brain was heffalumps. What was a heffalump like? Was it fierce? Did it come when you whistled? And how did it come? Was it fond of pigs at all? If it was fond of pigs, did it make any difference what sort of pig? Supposing it was fierce with pigs, would it make any difference if the pig had a grandfather called Trespassers William? He didn't know the answer to any of these questions, and he was going to see his first heffalump in about an hour from now. Of course, Pooh would be with him, and it was much more friendly with two. But suppose heffalumps were very fierce with pigs and bears? Wouldn't it be better to pretend that he had a headache and couldn't go up to the 6 pine trees this morning? But then suppose that it was a very fine day and there was no heffalump in the trap. Here he would be, in bed all the morning, simply wasting his time for nothing. What should he do? And then he had a clever idea. He would go up very quietly to the 6 pine trees now, peep very cautiously into the trap and see if there was a heffalump there. And if there was, he would go back to bed, and if there wasn't, he wouldn't. So off he went. At first he thought that there wouldn't be a heffalump in the trap, and then he thought that there would. And as he got nearer, he was sure that there would, because he could hear it heffalumping about it like anything.
Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear,
said Piglet to himself, and he wanted to run away. But somehow, having got so near, he felt that he must just see what a heffalump was like. So he crept to the side of the trap and looked in.
Corner of the street. Down by the corner of the street, where the three roads meet, and the feet of the people as they pass go tweet, tweet, tweet. Who comes tripping round the corner of the street? One pair of shoes which are nurses, one pair of slippers which are Percy's. Tweet, tweet, tweet. Wind on the hill. No one can tell me, nobody knows, where the wind comes from, where the wind goes. It's flying from somewhere as fast as it can. I couldn't keep up with it, not if I ran. But if I stopped holding the string of my kite, it would blow with the wind for a day and a night. And then, when I found it, wherever it blew, I should know that the wind had been going there too. So then I could tell them where the wind goes. But where the wind comes from, nobody knows.
The Complete Works of Winnie the Pooh, performed by Peter Dennis, based on the stage show Bother. Music composed and conducted by Don Davis. Piano played by Gloria Chang and clarinet by Charles Boito. Production recorded and mixed by Jeff Sykes at KCRW Santa Monica. Executive producer Jacqueline Delorier. Radio production directed by Christopher Toyne. A co-production of KCRW and Bother LA Production.
You've just heard the complete works of Winnie the Pooh on ICANN HD2 and ICANNradio.org. Unabridged recordings of the 4 Winnie the Pooh books can be found at danpour.com or by calling 1-855-369-6768.
Was in Which Rabbit Has a Busy Day, and we learn what Christopher Robin does in the mornings. You just listened to the complete works of Winnie the Pooh on ICANN. Catch Christopher Robin, Winnie the Pooh, and all of your other favorite 100 Acre Wood residents right here on ICANNradio.org. Tomorrow we'll hear in which Pooh invents a new game and Eeyore joins in. You're listening to ICANN. Oregon Coast Aquarium is a journey from seafloor to shore, and we're offering a wave of new experiences. This summer, you can hone your climbing skills in their new nature play area. Then head over to their outdoor amphitheater to meet a cast of animal ambassadors, or view their headwaters feature to follow a raindrop's voyage from the mountains to the sea. You can plan your next adventure at aquarium.org.
Early one bright summer morning, Peter opened the garden gate and went out into the great green meadow. On a branch of the tall tree sat the bird, Peter's friend. "All is quiet, all is quiet," chirped the bird merrily. Just then, the duck came waddling out of the garden. She was very glad that Peter had not closed the garden gate. And so, she decided to take a nice swim in the deep pond in the meadow. Seeing the duck, the bird flew down upon the grass, settled next to the duck, and shrugged her shoulders. "What kind of a bird are you if you can't fly?" said she. To this, the duck replied, "What kind of a bird are you if you can't swim?" And she plopped into the pond. Thank you. They argued and argued. The duck swimming in the pond, the bird hopping along the bank. Suddenly, something caught Peter's attention. He spotted the cat slinking through the grass. While the bird is busy arguing, I'll just grab her. Stealthily on her velvet paws, the cat crept towards her. Look out! Shouted Peter, and the bird immediately flew up into the tree. While the duck quacked angrily at the cat. From the middle of the pond. The cat prowled round and round the tree, thinking to herself, "Is it worth climbing up so high? By the time I get there, the bird may have flown away." Then Peter's grandfather came out of the cottage. He was very angry because Peter had gone into the meadow.
"It is a dangerous place. If a wolf should come out of the forest, then what would you do?"
Peter paid no attention to his grandfather's words. Boys like Peter are not afraid of wolves. However, Grandfather took Peter firmly by the hand, led him home, and locked the gate. But no sooner was Peter inside the garden than a big gray wolf came out of the dark forest. quick as a flash, the cat scampered up the tree. The duck quacked louder than ever and became so excited that, flapping her wings, she jumped right out of the pond. But no matter how fast the duck tried to run, she couldn't escape the wolf. He was getting nearer and nearer, catching up with her. And then he caught her, and with one huge gulp, he swallowed her. Now, this is how things stood. The cat was sitting on one branch of the tree. And the bird was perched on another. But not too close to the cat. And the wolf stalked round and round the tree, looking up at them with fierce, greedy eyes. Meanwhile, Peter, who wasn't a bit afraid, stood behind the garden gate watching all that was going on. He ran to the cottage, found a strong rope, and climbed up the high stone wall. Now, one of the branches of the tree, around which the wolf was stalking, happened to stretch out over the wall. And so, taking hold of the branch, Peter nimbly climbed from the wall up into the tree. Peter said to the bird, "Fly down and circle round the wolf's head. But be careful, don't let him catch you." The bird almost touched the wolf's nose with her wings, while the wolf snapped angrily at her from this side and that. Oh, how that little bird annoyed the wolf. And oh, how the wolf was desperate to catch her. But the bird was swift and clever, and the wolf simply couldn't do anything about it. Meanwhile, Peter made a lasso with the rope and, carefully letting it down, he caught the wolf by the tail and pulled with all his might. Feeling himself caught, the wolf began to jump about wildly, trying to get loose. But Peter had tied his end of the rope to the branch. And the wolf's jumping only made the loop around his tail tighter. Just then, the hunters came out of the forest. Following the wolf's trail and shooting as they went. But Peter, sitting high up in the tree, cried out, "Don't shoot! The bird and I have caught the wolf. Come, help us take him to the zoo." Thank you. Imagine the triumphant procession. Peter, out in front. Following Peter, the hunters leading the wolf. Winding up the procession came Grandfather and the cat. But even now, Grandfather was still angry, shaking his head and frowning.
Well, but if Peter hadn't caught the wolf, what then?
Flying above them all was the bird, chirping merrily. See what brave fellows we are, Peter and I. Look what we have caught. If you listen carefully, you can hear the duck softly quacking inside the wolf's belly because the wolf, in his hurry, had swallowed her alive. And that is the story of Peter and the Wolf.
Would you like to have some fun? They are celebrating at Grandfather's tonight, and we have been invited to the party. I hear that there will be music and dancing. Come with me.
Please, come in.